Pod Clubhouse.
There is a lot of content in the world. Each year, we're inundated with thousands of hours of television, hundreds of movies, new music every week. It can be overwhelming. How do you know what's worth your time and what you should just skip? Well, Pod Clubhouse is here to help. With the Love It or Leave It, the podcast, we tell you what you must need to watch, what you should watch, what you can skip, and what is just pure dumpster fire trash. This is the Love It or Leave It podcast. Tonight, we are talking about Beecham House, a new PBS masterpiece theater show. Joining me is a very special guest, Dani Dudik. She has done everything in TV and pop culture, but most recently, she is the creator and editor of ATXGossip.com. She's also the editor-in-chief of Austin.com and Free Fun in Austin.com. She's just generally a guru on all things Austin and pop culture. Dani, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Your website is the place I go to when I want to know about things in Austin, probably one of the hippest places in the country. Tell me, because we have some shocking news that came out actually the night before we're recording this about South By is canceled. As someone on the ground, can you talk a little bit about that and what that means for Austin, Texas?
Well, hold on. Let me wipe away my tears. People keep saying it's devastating, and it truly is. I'm trying to say heartbroken instead, because obviously, if this virus spreads as predicted, that, yes, that would be devastating. So canceling the festival, maybe devastating isn't the right word. But yeah, it's heartbreaking. This is something that myself and a lot of my friends and colleagues across the country depend on and look forward to. But the biggest impact is the toll it's going to take on the city and all of these bar owners and small business owners and people who own Airbnbs and Lyft and Uber drivers, pedicab drivers, and all the contractors. That this is a huge revenue source for them that they're now going to lose. And that's a shame. That's what I'm working on in the next week, is encouraging people to still support events that are happening in local businesses and tip well, you know, use shared driving services, things like that, because it's just sad.
So we were speaking beforehand, and for those that don't know, the South by Southwest Festival originally started, I think you said 30 years ago?
Over 30, yeah.
Over 30 years ago, and it started originally as a music fest, right? But it's grown into a music festival still, but also a big launching pad for some TV, but a lot of movies, especially independent movies and more independent, but like with the maybe chance to pop big and break out, something like a Booksmart from last year, or like The Art of Self-Defense, which were two favorites from my South By experience last year. It's this major festival, and it's not just a little bit of Austin. It takes over Austin. As a new person to the festival last year, I was shocked at how immersive all of Austin becomes during the 2 weeks that South By is in town. I can't imagine what this will do to the city as a whole, just the economic rippling, to say nothing of the art side of it. What are people going to do without being able to debut their movies and get that launching pad?
The mayor said in the press conference, or one of the officials, it's about $365 million is what they expect the loss to be.
And you have to imagine, like, insurance, you know, even if you have, like, event insurance, probably doesn't cover this. I don't even know how any of that kind of stuff would work for the possibility of a virus outbreak. Not even something confirmed, like the possibility of it. You know, it's interesting. You said it a little bit, too. If this ends up spreading, then the city of Austin is going to seem very forward-thinking, and they're going to get praised for making the right decision. But if this burns out and turns out not to be anything very big, there's going to be a lot of second-guessing, a lot of armchair quarterbacking on whether or not they did the right thing. What's your impression as kind of on the ground? And if you follow Dani on social media, you know a lot of things Austin run through her. She is a big source of people go to her for information. I do. I go to ATX Gossip a lot. What's been your feeling of people in Austin and their reaction to South By's decision to cancel, or Austin telling South By, really, to cancel the fest?
I like your description of being the source for all things. I also just have a lot of opinions.
You're a hub. You are the hub, I would dare say.
Well, thank you so much. First of all, you said it best about like the armchair quarterback, or however you phrased it. On social media, everyone's weighing in across the country. People that don't know anything about South By, or aren't related to the entertainment industry in any way, or the tech industry, or musician, filmmaker, anything. They're all weighing in on whether this was the right decision, you know, what their personal beliefs are and feelings. Listen, None of that matters. It doesn't matter what we think, whether it was the right thing. If I personally think it was the right thing to do, like I said, it matters that we support any party involved that's losing money. But here, from what I'm seeing, I was out last night. I chatted with some people. Of course, I've been getting lots of text messages and DMs from people looking at some of my contacts on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, seeing what people are saying. I think we're pretty much on the same page in the city that there are some of us who think this could be overhype. But it is what it is. Debating whether or not it was the right call isn't going to get us anywhere. So let's just move forward and do what we can to support, like you said, the filmmakers, musicians, anyone that needs our help. I'm here for it. I'm happy to promote anything and everything.
It was great, actually, to see last night the kind of outpouring on Twitter of reviewers, people who run websites, bloggers, critics, reaching out to the industry and saying, you know, if you're a small indie movie maker, if you're a, you know, if you're a small recording artist, you know, reach out to us. We'll review it. Send us a screen or DM us. Give us your details. You know, you don't have to lose the publicity just because you can't be at the festivals. Obviously, Pop Culture Review will also be willing to do that too, and Pod Clubhouse. I hope everyone working together minimizes the effects, but it's going to be interesting to see what the rippling effect is. You know, this is really the big first fest of the year. It's not too long before there's Anaheim WonderCon coming up in a month. Then we're at San Diego Comic-Con and ATX TV Fest in June. This is the beginning of festival season, so it's going to be interesting to see what this means for the rest of the country as this coronavirus scare kind of spreads. But Danny, that's not why we're here today. We're not here to talk about South By, as interesting and heartbreaking as that news is. We're here to talk about whether we loved or whether we want to leave PBS's new Masterpiece show, Beecham House. What's your relationship with Masterpiece? Have you watched any of the shows? Are you a fan of the period drama, British imports?
I am. And I think after Downton ended, I kind of fell off of the PBS, kind of fell off my radar. And I don't know why, just because we're inundated with so many different things to watch. But I ended up last year, one of the I Live Here, I Give Here days here in Austin, I decided to donate to KLRU, our local PBS. I donated enough money that I got the passport for free. I mean, passport was included with my donation. So I got on there recently and saw all these masterpieces I haven't seen. So I watched Sanditon a couple weeks ago, and then I was really sad when I was done with that and wanted something else. And luckily, Beecham House came up about a week and a half later. I said, great, let me try this out.
I had a very similar relationship. I was a big fan of Downton Abbey, but then I kind of fell off, especially with the PBS, the way the local stations and their schedules work. It can be a little unpredictable when things are, you know, for broadcast TV, as an endangered species as it is, it always makes me baffled. But every day I put together a what to watch list over on Pop Culture Review. I'm always baffled when I can't find something new that I remembered. It was on this time and this date. It was on a Sunday at 9 last week, and now the next 2 weeks it's not on, but then it pops up again. But I miss things like Poldark. I miss Sanditon. I knew people were watching it, but by the time it came to me, it was kind of that train had already passed by, so it's on the list to catch up with. But I miss Victoria. I missed all of the big stuff that's come since Downton. But I heard about Beecham House. Just from what I heard, I love historical dramas. I like period dramas. I like people in costumes. I'm a big history buff. It seemed it was going to have like a big household, a big ensemble cast. These are all things I like. So I was definitely interested in Beecham House from the get-go. It's an interesting story. Beecham House is not based on a book, which I don't know why that surprised me. It sounds like it is like a Charles Dickens novel. I was surprised. Were you surprised that this was an original story?
I didn't really think about it, to be honest with you. I kind of went in blind. I came off the Sanditon high. I was sad that that was done. So I just dove into this. I didn't give it really a lot of thought. I did no research. I just jumped in.
That's the street cred of Masterpiece. That is their proven track record, that they re-air high-quality British imports. I like that a lot, that you had that kind of faith. Beecham House actually is not airing for the first time on PBS right now. It actually aired last year in Britain, or England, on ITV. They aired in June and July. It was a summer series over there. It was created by Gurinder Chadha, who is best known for writing and directing Bend It Like Beckham. And last year, she co-wrote and directed Blinded by the Light, the Pakistani Bruce Springsteen mashup movie that made a little bit of a splash here in the States. She's a co-creator with her husband, Paul Maeda Burgess, and Shahrukh Hussain. these three have all kind of worked together a bunch. Obviously, Paul and Gurinder are married, and they have been working together since like the Ben to like Beckham days. In October, ITV actually decided not to renew it for a second season. So at least overseas, in England on ITV, there will not be a second series, as they would call it, of Beecham House, which if you watch through to the end of the show will drive you crazy. But Gurinder is on, and she's actually doing a whole big marketing campaign now with it rolling out in the States, trying to drum up an international broadcaster and production company that may want to produce a second season. Maybe if it takes off here in America like Sanditon did, then, you know, maybe we'll get to see a second series of it. Right now, it's just airing on PBS Passport, starting on March 1st last week. You can access the episodes online. Summer, it'll actually be on TV. So it's actually not broadcasting on TV right now. It is only available on PBS Passport, which is interesting. It's a new experiment that the PBS stations are doing, using Passport as a launching place before they put stuff on TV, actually. Did you recognize any of the faces here in this cast? Did any of these people jump out at you?
I did. So I knew that the guy playing John Beecham looked familiar, but I had to kind of dive into IMDb and see where I'd seen him, because he's kind of new to us here in the States.
Right.
But Mrs. Patmore is his mom.
Yes. And she's playing a handful here. She's playing a very unlike Mrs. Patmore character here. She's playing Henrietta Beecham.
She's a little harsh.
A little harsh. A little xenophobic, I would say.
That's putting it lightly.
Yeah, it's actually an interesting mix of British actors. Tom Bateman from Vanity Fair playing John Beecham. You have Dakota Blue Richards playing Mrs. Osborne. I guess she's best known for Endeavor. Leo Sutter playing his brother Daniel Beecham. Leslie Nicol from Downton Abbey, she played Miss Patmore. Mark Warren, who I knew from Flack, which is another British show that I'm a big fan of, that gets played here on Pop TV and Showtime. I guess he actually made his name in another TV show called Safe. So that's like the white actors, I guess you would say. And then the rest of the cast are all pretty well known, from what I've read, Indian actors and actresses. I was very happy that they didn't whitewash the show, as it were. Like, the Indian characters are being portrayed by Indian or American Indian actors and actresses. That surprised me actually a little bit, because that's not, I think, how most American TV shows would have proceeded. What did you think of the general casting in the show?
I thought it was great. One thing I need to add also, when we talk about recognizable people, the gentleman playing Daniel was from Sanditon, and he was one of my favorite characters. Yes. In Sanditon. So
not only Sanditon, he was also in Victoria. So he is hitting it out of the park with the popular PBS shows. Leo, I don't know if it's Sutter or Suter, because it's only one T, S-U-T-E-R. So my gut is to say Sutter, but I don't know. Beecham House, in short, without being too spoilery, I've seen through the end. I don't know, Danny, did you end up watching through the end of the series? I know you had watched several of the episodes.
I still have half of episode 5 and then the final episode. So when you were kind of teasing that I'm going to be angry at the end, I will tell you, most people were angry at the end of Sanditon, which has not been picked up for a second season either at this point.
Interesting. Interesting. You know, I went looking for reviews of, because like I said, this was available as of March 1st on PBS, and we're recording this on March 7th, and I could not find any US reviews. There was some Rotten Tomato aggregator stuff, and it's not very well received, but all of the reviews were from the ITV release last summer. I don't know if anyone other than maybe us are covering this show, but I feel like Sanditon was everywhere. It was all over social media, I feel like. I heard about it a lot, even though it was a show I was not watching.
No, and everyone I tell about it knew nothing about it. Then they've been diving in and messaging me and Marco Poloing me and discussing the show, because we're all really excited about it. So it's interesting that no one else is talking about it. And as you had mentioned to me prior, that it didn't really get great reviews elsewhere.
So the show is about this mysterious man, John Beecham. It's set in 1795. So we're, you know, right before, you know, very late 18th century. John Beecham is a former soldier in the East India Company. He has left the East India Company and struck out on his own. He is trying to become a merchant of artifacts and art and diamonds and jewels, you know, the finer things in life. He comes to this palatial home that he has just bought in Delhi. He seems to have a lot of money. No one knows why. He has a baby, but no obvious mother. He has got a staff of caregivers, Indian caregivers, two women, Chinchal and Maya, for the baby. He's introduced to his staff. He's very standoffish. He doesn't speak. He's got a real Han Solo swagger about him. There's several scenes, especially in the first episode, where he's walking around with a white shirt and a black vest, and he's got like a knife hanging off of his hip. Very Han Solo vibe from him. Got the beard. He's shirtless within minutes, hacking away at some bushes. He's kind of a romance novel cover dream in a lot of ways. It was interesting. Slowly, we are introduced to his mother comes to stay, a young, beautiful Indian woman who shows up at the house, who maybe seems to be related to him or the baby. There's this whole lot of mystery. There's a 3-year time period where the show opens on a flashback where he gets shot after saving an Indian family. He's shot, and then we jump forward 3 years. And so there's a missing 3-year period of his life. There's a lot of mystery in the show, really, from the get-go. The 6 episodes are about learning who is John Beecham, who is this man, who is this baby, why is he being so secretive about their identity, especially the baby's identity, which seems to be a very guarded secret. And there's also a lot of Downton Abbey-esque staff interactions, which I had read that the show was, you know, the Indian version of Downton Abbey, which I don't think is a really fair comparison, but there are definitely similarities because you get to see a lot, the behind the scenes, the staff working, talking about their new caretakers in the house.
Now, you did a great job of describing John Beecham, except you failed to mention that he is super freaking hot.
Well, I said that he was like a romance novel cover dream. But yes, he is a very attractive man. Everyone in the show, other than maybe, you know, Ms. Beecham, you know, Ms. Patmore, who is an older lady, all of the young people in the show, whether they are white or they are Indian, are all super attractive.
I have to disagree with you on one point. Love that they did this. The women they cast as the English,
oh yes, that's
potential
true,
loves are not attractive. And then you put them next, well, maybe they are attractive in real life, but you put them next to those Indian women.
I mean, there's Chinchal, who is one of the baby's caregivers. So Chinchal is played by Shreya Pilgankar. And then there is Chandrika, who's the mysterious Indian lady who seems to be very bossy and have a claim over the baby of some sort, but we're not sure if she's the mother or what her deal is. Her name is Pallavi Sharda, who I think both have a little bit of Western movie interaction, but they're mostly known as Indian stars. They are just beautiful women. The woman playing Violet's name is Bessie Carter. Her best credit is she was a factory worker, unnamed factory worker in the Les Mis movie adaptation. She is a very quintessential 18th century English woman, which is not a compliment. But I thought Miss Osborne was fairly pretty, Dakota Blue Richards. I thought she was pretty. I don't know.
She's not unattractive, but she's not what I would have expected as the love interest to look like in a period piece like this, where they're, I shouldn't say in a period piece like this, because she's probably more accurately cast,
right,
but they're usually giving, look at everyone else, look at the guys. They pick the most beautiful British men and put them in this.
True. I think you have raised a good point, but I think that is probably not unintentional though, because there is a very West Europe comes to India tension running through this show. The idea of Western invaders, or particularly the British, the French seem to be more welcomed here in the show, but it's loosely historically accurate. So the English, the East India Company, which really was a military arm of the English government for all intents and purposes by this point, did really sack Bengal, like they talk about in the show, sack and pillage it. And they would, about 8 years after the show takes place, invade Delhi, which is the fear of the Indian emperor in the show and the other the Indian higher-ups, the royalty of the show. They are worried about the East India Company, and they are suspicious of John Beecham because they know he is, quote-unquote, you know, retired from the company, but no one really believes that. There's a French general who is in the ear of the Indian emperor, and he hates the East India Company, and so he hates John Beecham without even knowing him. He's, you know, suspect, you know, it's kind of once part of the East India Company, always part of the East India Company. So that's why John is greeted with such suspicion by the royalty when he arrives in town, especially since he arrives with such mysterious circumstances. I think that goes towards the casting of these kind of very dour women. They're very buttoned up bodices. There's a recurring joke with Padmore I'm just going to call her that instead of Henrietta or Mrs. Beecham. She complains incessantly about the heat. She does not want to be in India. She hates it here. She thinks the food is disgusting. She changes all the names of the servants in the house from their Indian names to anglicized names that she can remember. The main manservant, his name is Bottle. She calls him Barton. You know, all that stuff really made me laugh. But I think going to your point about the casting, I think that was a very intentional thing.
There's one other thing I wanted to say, though, about the casting that I should have touched on earlier. It's so impressive, these English actors' quality of acting. And I got into a debate with a friend, and what we realized is that English actors are mostly all classically trained. They've been to college, they have acted on stage, so they have a different kind of background than the traditional actor here in the US currently. You know, people here get, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it necessarily, but people get discovered in shopping malls and walking down the street, you know, at very, very young ages. So they're trained in a different way than these English actors are.
That is 100% true. And it always shocks me the quality of English actors, and I'm using that gender inclusive. The talent pool in England is so deep that you can have this show. I've never heard of really any of these people. None of these people are well known, at least not in America. In this age of all of these kind of limited series TV concepts, all of like the Netflix shows and Amazon, they've moved to where you need to have this big name star fronting your show for the idea that no one's going to watch it if you don't have this big name star. But here you go. You have this high quality, high production value British show with people I don't know. But I found their acting to be fantastic. And beyond the English acting, I actually found the Indian acting, the Indian actors who are very largely unknown in Europe or America, I found it all to be very convincing and very compelling.
Totally agree.
I think we're just doing something wrong in America. I think maybe the fact that you're right, that we recruit future stars in shopping malls, maybe not a great thing. One of the criticisms from when the show aired last summer over in England was a white savior fantasy. Well, like, it was a trope of like the white man comes to save the native was a big criticism I read in a lot of different places. But also they found the acting, especially Tom Bateman as the lead John Beecham, to be very dull and wooden. I didn't find that at all.
Not for me. I find that interesting because now I didn't finish the series yet, but I have not gotten that savior vibe at all.
No, this is written by an Indian woman. This is Gurinder Chadha's baby. There are other people attached to the project. She has co-writers, but she is the face of this show. She has spent a career writing strong Indian stories, especially about Indian women and their struggles in life and what life is like from their perspective. And I think there's a lot of that here. But I think this is very, you know, Indians doing it for themselves alongside John Beecham, who is a patron of India. I don't think he's trying to save India. I think he's trying to be a partner with India.
No, and your description of Mrs. Patmore, I'm also going to call her that, that illustrates the hilarity that is opposite of that review. When they do act super English, they're bad guys. I feel it's written as those are the bad guys who are trying to change the country and make everything more Anglican, if I think that was the word you used. Yeah, I think it's totally opposite.
Yes, I completely agree. I think there is a big fear of the gentrification here, which, I mean, and historically did eventually happen. You know, a few years after this takes place, in reality, the English did conquer and then ruled India for another 100 years, unfortunately, and suppressed the people largely. But this show is very much about Indians realizing that they need to defend themselves to protect their identity. I don't think the show does anything like that. And I think when you get the staff, they're not mocking the staff. These are not caricatures of the chef and the main male butler head. I'm trying to think of like Downton Abbey-esque. There was a little bit, I guess, of the staff, like comparisons to the way the staff was and their kooky interactions. But I liked how they would kind of drink at night and make fun of Mrs. Beecham. But they weren't disrespectful. They were just kind of like, this fucking white woman, she's crazy. Like, she come to India and she thinks she's looking for air conditioning in 1795.
Yeah, I felt it was very real. It was, like you said, not a caricature of anyone. It's not written to make the staff, to make light of the staff's lives. I felt it was very realistic. They just worked in little scenes like you're talking about of the staff off on the side, maybe making a comment here and there, like you would in real life.
Now, I will say, when I was thinking about whose story is this, who would I say the lead of the story is? Obviously, it's John Beecham's story. I mean, the show is named after his house, Beecham House. But beyond him, whose story is this? And I did come up with all of the white actors, I guess, first. There's a romance story. They're obviously, they are putting John with Miss Osborne. That's the love interest concept, white woman. You have his conflict with the royals, but that's really being led by his conflict with the French general, white guy. You have his brother showing up, white guy. You have his partner, Samuel Parker, the mysterious former East India Company captain who's left the company in disgrace, not nearly as honorably, it doesn't seem, as John, white guy. So, you know, but you do have significant stories, though, that feature the Indian cast. You have, there's a Chinchal plot there that unfolds over the course of the season. You do have Chandrika, the mysterious woman who shows up that seems to have some prior relationship that no one knows about with John. I guess I did come up with all of the white actors first and their plots as the main plots of the show, but I don't think they're the only plots. And I think on total, I think the show is very well balanced. The native, as it were, storylines and screen time and character development versus the quote unquote white actors. Did you agree with that?
I think you're right. I definitely would go in the kind of the direction you did. I'd go with John Beecham as the main character. Then I think of Daniel, the brother, Mrs. Patmore.
We know you're thinking about Daniel, the brother. You made that very clear earlier.
But I will say, of the storylines, the storyline that I connected with the least was the French general guy. I almost felt like it was unnecessary, but I haven't finished. But from the point I'm at, I'm kind of like, when he's there, I feel I zone out a little bit.
I don't disagree with you. I think he was the only storyline, and I think he was the only character that was really felt like a total caricature. He almost looked like Captain Crunch a little bit to me, you know, from the cereal box, and about as fleshed out as that. And that's not a knock on it, but luckily he's not a major part of the story. Even the storylines that he touches with, he is not an important part. So I didn't really focus on a lot, but I 100% agree with you. He was the least compelling for me. I think John's interaction with Chandrika are really interesting. I think his family dynamic is really interesting. I wasn't even really so sold on the love interest story. I don't really care. Rom-coms are fine. Romance stories are fine. That's not really why I watch shows. That's not the thing. If you want me to watch something, don't tell me it's a great romance story. That's probably not going to do it for me. So I never really care about the John and Miss Osborne. I think it's well done. I think it's well acted, and I think it's pretty well written. But I don't really care about that. But I think just learning about John and his mystery, I like seeing him a lot with his family. I like the interactions with him and his brother, who is also in the East India Company, but who is home because he was injured. And he's kind of the bad boy of the family, as it seems. Dealing with his mother, who is the xenophobe, but also seeing that he has totally embraced the lifestyle of India. This is his home now. And learning how this British man came to embrace India as his own, I think is the really most compelling story of all.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, by the way, about the storylines. I feel the exact same way. Even the love story part, which I feel is probably put in for females, you know, saying we have to have romance in this period piece. That's what they are. I totally feel the same way. I was a little disconnected from that. It was fine. Like you said, it's acted well and written well, but I was more into his story, just like you. I really did enjoy him embracing the culture, as you said, and learning about this kind of mystery of these years that we haven't seen, and even the mystery of the other people that come in, and you're learning about their background and why they behave the way they behave and what's driving them. That was definitely the part I enjoyed the most, in addition to the Indian culture aspect of the series, because I also like history a lot, and I watch a lot of, like, I did watch Victoria. I forgot about that one when we were talking about history with PBS. I watch a lot of British monarchy things. So I'm very well versed on that world. I am not very well versed on Indian culture and history. So I enjoyed that aspect of it because I was entertained and educated at the same time. And that is the perfect combo for me.
Yeah. I mean, even without being historically accurate, date to date, They do drop some really interesting factoids. There are conversations about former governor generals, you know, and British people who pillaged India a little too much. There's a reference to a guy named Hastings, who him and John and Samuel Parker are talking about him getting, after a long trial, getting acquitted. Like, that was a real thing that happened based in his time in India when he extorted and stole a bunch of money from the country. Like I said before, the Bengalese conquest by the British. Like, so I wasn't watching this for a history lesson, but I did like that they approximated well what the tension and the tone of the time is like. You know, this is a country with all of these outside influences descending upon it, a centuries old, maybe millennia old, you know, culture that's having all these outside forces put upon it at the turn of a century. And, you know, even if it's 1795 into 1800, a turn of a century is always a big thing. And that always represents upheaval and change. I don't care what century it is. There's just something about a number rolling over from 99 to 100 that makes something feel new and different and change. And I think that's what you're getting from the show, is that there's always a tension, even if it's not being talked about. There's this culture clash tension that I really, really liked about it. Maybe like the most about it. I liked that the setting of the show as much as maybe anything else in the show. Speaking of which, the show, I found it was beautiful. It was shot on location in India. Did you notice the scenery, the cinematography, you know, as I guess you would call it?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I feel like we've said this multiple times throughout. It's a high quality. Everything about this series is on brand for PBS, for Masterpiece, for British television. It's gorgeous. It's stunning. I loved it.
This was shot on location in India. When you see the Beecham house for the first time, when he rolls through the gates, it's this palace. It's a mansion unlike anything I've seen, but it's not like a Beverly Hills mansion and that kind of very American style. It's this glimpse of the old world that really exists. It really transport you to that time and place, I felt, which I like. I want a show that is going to make me watch, that's not going to like make me pick up my phone and scroll through it. I felt compelled to keep my eyes on the screen, and the backdrop for the show had as much to do with that as anything. The exterior shots and the natural lighting, but then also the ornate sets inside, and I think they shot on location in like a real palace hotel in India, I believe. It was as pretty as the actors and actresses.
Exactly, and the costumes as well, especially Chandrika. Her costumes are drop dead gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, again, and it really goes towards the culture clash aspect of it. You know, you have Mrs. Padmore and her companion Violet, you know, Bessie Carter, these dour English women wearing dark colors, or if they're not dark color, then it was a buttoned up all the way to the collar. You know, every inch from head to toe was covered with a hat and a parasol. And then you had these luxurious, you know, sumptuous Indian outfits that Chandrika would wear, that Chanchal would wear, that just the native dress of the women. And it was luxurious. It was, you just wanted to kind of put the silk up to your face, you know, and like rub it a little bit. It was very well done. Just putting those things side by side, just the juxtaposition of the old and the new. I always think about TV has changed a lot with binge television, where we don't necessarily need to be sucked into a show in the first or second episode because we're going to sit down and watch eight at once. I classically find myself saying to people all the time now, for a Netflix show or an Amazon show, you got to give it to episode 4 or 5, and then you're really going to be sucked into it. And I genuinely mean that. But TV wasn't like that. TV used to be you had to get sucked in like Lost. Lost sucks you in its first hour. The West Wing sucks you in its first hour because it had to. Because it wasn't going to be on again for a week, and it had to make you remember it. This is kind of still more like that old type of show, even though you can watch it online. I think you can watch all the episodes online. Did the first hour or two, I'll even give you 2 hours, did they suck you in, or did you find yourself saying, I have to stick with this and see if it gets good?
Okay, so I'm glad you asked that, because the first episode, I started watching, I think on a Sunday night after I'd watched some of my other shows, and I was tired. And so I found myself not getting sucked into it. I think about halfway through, I decided to just call it a night and hit the sack. Then I got up in the morning and I started watching it again. and was way more into it. So I think I was just tired, because this is obviously a specific type of show. These masterpiece shows, they're slower than what you're talking about. These network shows that are boom, crash, you know, all kinds of right. effects and big
smoke
jumps.
Monster. Yeah.
So. Yeah. But by the end of the first episode, I was into it. I was ready to watch the second episode. And I think because they had built enough of that mystery about him. And mm-hmm. I love that you said the Han Solo swagger, because I didn't think that, but you're totally right. He's an appealing actor. It's an appealing, he plays it well. Everything about him, it was appealing. And not just because he's hot, but I found I wanted to stick with him by the end of the first episode.
It's a little bit that he's hot. But I think it's also, in the same way Harrison Ford commands the screen as Han Solo, but even actually as the show went on, I amended it. I think he looked a little bit like Han Solo with the vest and the swagger and the off the hip thing, but he actually has a much more Indiana Jones vibe to him. Again, another Harrison Ford role. I think he commands your attention because his face is so compelling. He doesn't have to be speaking a lot, but you're trying to figure out what he's thinking because he's so insular. He's so buttoned up because he's holding in, you get the impression he's holding the weight of the world inside him. I found myself watching his face and his mannerisms even more than his words, because I wanted to crack open that mystery of this guy. That's what sucked me in. It's a very typical pilot, a very typical first episode. It's doing a lot of work. This is a large cast, some complicated names. There's a lot of moving parts here. Who's doing what? Who is who? Should I care about this person? Do I not need to care about this person? So that's first episode stuff. But with only six episodes total, I also wanted it to really move a little bit faster. But like you, I think they set enough of the mystery trap for me by the end of the first episode that I was like, I definitely need to watch episode two. And by the end of episode two, I was in. I think between one and two, they not only lay out all the players, they lay out all the mysteries, and they lay out all the conflicts. And you really have a good sense of a general sense of what you're going to be in for the duration. So if you're concerned and you found it a little bit slow, like kind of Dani did at the end of her first night, I'd say stick with it. I think if you are giving it the time and attention, I think you're going to be happy with the reward of it. What did you think of the general mysteries? Were they compelling?
Yes, for sure. But like I said, it's the way he sells that mystery. You described it perfectly, better than I could, with his face, with the way he holds himself. Everything about John Beecham is what drew me in. Then, of course, yes, I enjoyed all these other storylines. As we discussed, I enjoyed those actors and those characters. But it's him. He drives this show for sure.
One of the things people are going to be happy about as they go through the series, and again, this is, you have to love British TV. At, you know, six episodes, they call it a season. It's like when Sherlock would air and they would have 3 hour and a half episodes and they call that a season. You know, you're not making a terrible time investment here. So I guess that's a plus. It's only 6 hours. You know, each episode runs 48 to 52 minutes. But I think you're going to find they do actually a pretty good job of fleshing out these characters. Not all of them, you know. General Castellan, the French general we talked about before, I think stays pretty two-dimensional. Violet, Bessie Carter, she stays pretty two-dimensional. But the Mrs. Beecham, you haven't gotten there yet, but I'm going to tell you, no spoilers, but they round her out. She isn't just a xenophobic character. That's what she really is for most of the season, but they actually give her some substance that I found refreshing in the total. Daniel, who I think comes on the show in episode two, the brother, he's, like I said, he's his bad boy brother. We're introduced to him at the end of the first season. We see him hanging out in like a hookah bar surrounded by beautiful women. I was surprised at how much they spent on developing his character, again, in just six short episodes. You end up feeling like you know who these people are, but a lot more of them than you would have thought. They, for such a large cast, I felt like I really understood who all of these people were. The show, what are pitfalls that people should be prepared for if they're going to watch this?
I don't have any. Like I said, the only thing was I thought the first episode was a little bit slow, because this is the style of show. It's going to be slow. You cannot look at your phone and be playing online while you're watching the show. You're going to miss a lot. You have to pay attention. You have to go in knowing that this is that kind of show. This is a show where you need to watch the screen. not be distracted, not be cleaning your house while you're watching or like playing on social media. This is a sit down and watch series. So you have to dedicate that time and energy to it.
I 100% agree with that. And I think if you dedicate 100% of your attention to it, I think you're going to be rewarded. I think you're going to walk away at the end of the hour and say that was time well spent, despite what the critics say. I actually think this is a very good story. I think the narrative is well presented and well written and executed. Definitely watch with your closed captions on if you have the ability to.
Good call.
Watch with closed captions. Like Down Abbey, there's a lot of people on the screen, especially the outdoor scenes, the way the miking works, the way the sound mixing works in these shows. A lot of low parts, a lot of complicated names, a lot of low spoken dialogue. Definitely keep your closed captions on. That would probably be my biggest negative. That, and this isn't a big blockbuster American show. You know, this isn't Hunters on Amazon, if you're watching that show right now, which I actually liked, but it's a very different show where there's a ton of action. There's explosions to pick your eyes up from your phone. Oh, what just happened? I heard an explosion. You know, like you said, you have to watch. It's either dialogue or it's silent face acting. So you have to be watching the screen to get what's going on. You can't wait for a big explosion to pull you back, to pull your attention back. So I agree with you. Definitely commit the time, and I think you're going to be rewarded.
I think the other negative some people will have, and again, I haven't finished the series, so you're more knowledgeable on this than I am, the fact that there's not a second season. We have become this culture where we want more and more and more of everything. I disagree with that. I'm totally fine with one season of something. If it's a good story and we can get that told in 6 episodes, I'm totally cool with that. Sanditon, people are all up in arms about the way it ended, that it needs another season. I disagree. A show can just end. It's totally cool. And even if you don't like the ending, well, that's the way that story ended. You know what? Real life doesn't always end in a nice, pretty bow either. I think you go into a series to appreciate what it is, and when it ends, it ends. And that's okay.
And it's refreshing to watch a show that finishes its story. And, you know, like a good meal, you can, you know, wipe your mouth, put your napkin down and say, I'm full. I had the entire story I needed and, you know, I'm ready to leave the table. And I will tell you, this show does that. When I said that people, when you watch to the end of it, will want a second season, it's because of what they've laid out that would come next that you would want a second season. But this is a 98% well-contained story. I felt very full. I felt very wrapped up. All of the mysteries are basically wrapped up. Just like you, if this doesn't come back, I would have liked to known what would have happened, but I also felt completely sated with this Beecham House meal I've had.
And it's okay to not know what would happen. You make up your own story. That's okay. You know, they laid out enough for you to think about, and you can imagine what you would like to happen next, just like reading a good book. The story ends, and then I think, oh, I hope they live happily ever after. I don't know if they do, and that's okay.
I think we've covered basically everything, so now we have to come to, and I don't think it's going to be a surprise, we come to the end of the show where we tell you guys, well, Danny, did you love it, or are you going to leave it?
I love it, and the hot dudes.
Come for the hot dudes, stay for the good story. I hear you.
That's
I hear
a good
you. I tell you.
Line.
You know, listen, I am a red-blooded American male. I appreciate it when he's Skyping and hacking the bush and he's giving orders and stuff with that shirt off in the hot Indian sun. I appreciated that. I'm secure enough to say that, you know, good for you, bro. Good on you and your sit-ups. But I'm over here staring at Chandrika. So, you know, it's all good. I also loved it. I think it's a gorgeous show. I think your eyeballs are going to be very happy that you put the show in front of them. It looks beautiful. The people are beautiful. The scenery is beautiful. But it's also great telling a great story. It tells a really interesting story that you don't see a lot of places. You don't get this kind of character-driven mystery that's so well done and so well produced often. So I think you have to appreciate it when you do have a chance to see it. And I think just the large ensemble really works well. I think you're going to be happy with the characters, where the characters go, their arcs, not just John Beecham. I'm not there for the romance, but I think if you are a romance-aphile, I think you'll be happy with what they do in the show. For me, it was 6 well-spent hours. So I am totally on board with Beecham House. I hope they get to season 2. I hope it takes off in America. This is the good, high-quality PBS/British import television that we want, and we want them to keep making. So definitely, people, go give it a look. Danny, thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you come to the Clubhouse some more. I had a lot of fun talking with you.
It was a blast. I love it.
Where can people find you? This is the time for you to give a shout out to yourself.
Well, my website is atxgossip.com, as you mentioned at the top of the show. My Instagram handle is also atxgossip. And on Twitter, I am atxgossipdanny.
Well, that's it. So definitely reach out to Danny. Follow her on social media, especially on Twitter. She puts up great stuff, her and her staff over at ATX Gossip. Definitely give them a look. You can find me at Pop Culture Review and at Pod Clubhouse on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook. We're all over the place. You can follow me personally on Twitter if you want, though I don't really talk about it much. It's PCR Mike Caputo. If you're interested in watching Peachum House, right now you have to go to PBS Online and subscribe to PBS Passport, and in the summer it'll be on TV. So thank you guys so much for listening to this Love It or Leave It, the podcast episode on Peachum House, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.
Pod Clubhouse.